Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the City Library and to our second session for Local History Week. It's lovely to see everybody along. I hope you can all hear. If you're at the back and you can hear, that's fine. Otherwise, please feel free to come forward and take some of those seats at the front. We had a wonderful lunchtime session yesterday, and we're really looking forward to today's session with Debbie. Debbie's come in, rushed in from work, and she's going to give us a lunchtime talk. So we're all very excited about today as well. I'd just like to introduce one of my colleagues, Huatahi Nuku. Huatahi works in the library and will be a familiar face to many of you. Huatahi is our Māori liaison librarian, and she also works part-time out at the Manawatū prison. And Huatahi this afternoon is going to introduce our speaker, Debbie Marshall-Lobb. So I'll just hand over to Huatahi.
Oh, kia ora tātou, and nau mai haere mai ki tō tātou whare puka puka nei. I have got the pleasure of introducing a very close friend of mine, which is Debbie Marshall-Lobb, sitting down here. And ngā mihi nui ki a koe te tuahine no rangitāne. Debbie's going to talk to us about growing up in the 60s and 70s in Palmerston North. And I'm sure I've heard lots of stories myself, but I'm waiting to hear a few more probably, and probably drop off a few more too, she's likely to. So I'll just get straight into it. We call her Fire Debbie up at Te Kirikaupapa Papa Māori or Manawatū, which fire means, you know, mum or auntie or someone very close to us. So she's going to run back to the kura. She's the principal up there. And she's finished, and I'd just like you to put your hands together and welcome Fire Debbie Marshall-Lobb.
Tēnā koe, whae huatahi. E korera wau, e mō nehu te pūmanawa nui ki tō tātou reo rangatira te mātahi o te tau ki te ura mai o te mutu. Kei te tū tēnei mokapuna o rangitāne, tū wharitoa, Ngāti Kuia, Ngāti Rangi ki te mihi atu ki a koutou. Nā reira, ki a koutou ngā pau o tēnei whare pukapuka, tēnei whare pupuri taonga, kia kore e mutu te mihi ki a koutou ngā kaitiaki. He rawi o koutou mahi, nā reire e te tuakana whae huatahi, kia ora mā o kupu mai oha, tēnā nō hoki koe, Philippa, o tira ki ngā whaea, ngā papa, tēnā tātou. Nau mai haere mai ki tēnei haora, mi ki te wā mahi. Greetings everyone. First of all, may I say, I think that this initiative is a wonderful initiative. Philippa hit it on the head when she said to me when I came in, she said, I bet you when I asked you, you felt, you know, because I said, yes, no problem. And as it was getting close to the time, I mean, this morning I was like thinking, I'm quite nervous about this. And then when I saw Huatahi, who had kindly been the one to put up my name, I thought, I'm going to kill her this, as I walked in, because initially I thought it would just be myself, Philippa and Huatahi. My mother last week said to me, I read this thing and that, look, it's got your name in it, you're giving a talk. And I said, yes, and you're banned too, you can't come along. And she said, all right, well, I do have a very important meeting out of Massey. She said, but your father will come. And I said, no, he's banned too, he can't come, no one's coming. And it wasn't, I suppose, Huatahi also had said to me, she said, probably because when you have your parents here, they say things like, oh, you miss so-and-so, don't forget so-and-so. And I thought, I hadn't thought about that. In fact, I think that it probably would have made me nervous. But now that Huatahi had prompted me, I thought, yes, that's quite true. My mother does that with a fair amount of regularity and says, oh, don't forget Auntie so-and-so. Well, look, I am privileged to be here and standing in front of you, and some of you, I see your faces and I think, I know these wonderful people, because when I went to Massey University College of Ed, which in those days was Palmerston North College of Education, I remember some of you who were my lecturers or colleagues that I had seen, and so I greet you and thank you. Young Māori and growing up in Palmerston North in the 60s and 70s. Yes, well, that was, believe it or not, I was the one who thought about that title, because at the time I wasn't quite sure what I would talk about when I came and talked about history. And I do know that history comes from the perspective of the person presenting it at the time. And I do think it's a privilege to stand before you. I know that my parents or my grandparents would have a different take on the same sort of events or situations or even personalities within our time, but this is from a very personal take. And in fact, when I grew up in Palmerston North in the 60s and 70s, I truly believe we knew every Māori family in this area, which of course I can't say now because there's so many Māori within Palmerston North and Manawatū, but I feel fairly confident that we knew every Māori whānau who lived within Palmerston North City and nearby, which is quite amazing. On my mother's side, my mother's family are from Awapuni, so they used to have very much into racehorses and farming, and they used to have the farm, which is now a significant area, that goes from Pioneer Highway, where the river is, the Mangoni Stream, from there over to Maxwell's Line and almost down to the race course, but somewhere in there was the old abattoirs. And so they had that farm, and my grandfather had inherited it from his grand-aunt who had helped raise him, Tiripa Te Rangi Otu. And they're part of the Te Rangi whānau and the Kere whānau, but my grandfather was actually born in Picton, so he's Rangitāne ki Wairo, and that's our whakapapa, is Rangitāne ki Wairo. But his mother and Tiripa Te Rangi Otu, who was the second wife of Hoani Meihana Te Rangi Otu, are buried out at Rangi Otu in the first Urupa, and there's two Urupa there, and their one is actually, if you go past Rangi Otu and you have a look at the old Urupa, which is the cemetery, the kuia that I mentioned, Tiripa Te Rangi Otu, is buried where the big statue is, and it's a memorial there. So when I grew up, we used to frolic in Awapuni and could run down to the race course. And in fact, Mr. Templeton used to be over the side. And my father had worked for him for 21 years. And so horses was a big feature. And Mum had grown up here, and her family, one of nine, so they were all into sports. They were very much into teaching. And it was my grandfather who was Māori from Rangitāne, Ki Wairo, but my grandmother came here when she was 12 from Bangor in Ireland. So that's, sorry, I had yesterday off work, I've got a cold, so if I crackle it's because I need a drink or cold water, sorry. Oh, thank you. And my great-grandfather on my mother's side was the first vet in Manawatū. And Harold Mead was his name. And when my grandmother had come out with her two younger sisters and her parents, my great-grandmother, Harriet, had apparently fretted so much for home that she had a breakdown and went to Porirua. And so my great-grandfather looked after her and took my grandmother everywhere, and they sort of did everything with horses. So she, right up until she died, she was almost like someone who loved animals. And we used to bemoan the fact that at her house at Foxton Beach, when she retired there, people would drop off kittens, litter of kittens or dogs or all animals, stray animals, and she would look after them. I don't think anyone else's grandmother would be known for carrying a puppy in her bra, all those things. And out at Awapuni, we had such wonderful times because Nanny and Kuro, they had that whare that was the kuias, and I think kuias is the old great-grandaunt, grandmother, and Tiripa Te Rangi Otu. And I suspect that it was, if memory serves me right, the main part of the house was just a one-room place with a fire, chipita in it. But every time when my grandparents married, and when they got married, that was frowned upon because he was Māori and she was non-Māori. And so she actually, her father for some time sort of disowned her until the grandchildren came along. But they actually had my great-grandmother on my Kuddle's side, she died in childbirth with her youngest child. So Nanny and Kuddle not only had to put up with the sort of being a bit of a novelty within Palmerston North, like one of the first mixed marriages of Māori and non-Māori, but they had my Kuddle's five younger half-siblings living with them, and they were like from 12 right down to a newborn, and then they had another 9 children themselves. So every time a baby was born, or one or two would come along, then my Kuddle, who was not a builder, would knock up a piece of the thing. But this house was lovely, and I remember it was quite eclectic kind of thing. My grandmother had things here, there. Being Irish, everyone had to have a room and a space. But I also remember when I'd have a bath, I would share that bathroom because Kuddle would put a fireplace in there with the lambs, with the orphan lambs, and feeding them as well. And it was really lovely. And when I'd go and stay with Daddy and Kuddle, I just loved it because I didn't have to brush my hair. I could sleep in the clothes I wanted to. And if my mother was here, she'd be horrified and say, "You don't tell people that." But I think it just added to the fact that it was a lovely childhood. And I used to have long hair. My father used to, family on the Māori side, were just so particular about long hair. Like, you know, look after it, plait it. And sometimes I used to go to the Charlie's fish and chip shop in Highbury, and he used to say, you Chinese girl, aren't you? You're a Chinese girl. And I'd say, "No, I'm Māori." He goes, "Look at your eyes, you're Chinese." I'd say, "No, it's because my father plaits my hair really tight." And I said, "But I don't mind being called Chinese, but I am Māori." And he would laugh, but my father used to get quite annoyed when he'd say, "You've been at Awapuni, you've been let wild for a whole week, you've been up early feeding the horses, the animals and all that, and you know, and you've come back like a ragamuffin." But a very happy one at that. I'd had a very happy time. I think also that there was sort of, for my Kuddle, there were fond times like when his own children came along, they were given names like Toitoi, my mother's older sister, because her hair was blonde. And the old ladies called her Toitoi, which is really a lovely sort of term of endearment for this little blondie. And, there are nice things like that. He also said that down where the old the home down Maxwell's Line, that used to be the hospital, the retirement hospital, which is now where Kia Ora FM is and that, he always knew that that was a very sacred place and that there were, you know, he revered it. He's been gone for a long time, but as a kid I remember we used to go for a walk there and he'd say, "Don't go over there, there's a urupa there. It's a graveyard there, or, you know, that's sacred. Come over here or go by here." But he also used to say that that was a real place that was rocking for, when he remembers as a young person, for Rangitāne, because it was close by the river. And I'm talking about where the tip is now, around by the old tip. And even as kids, we used to go down there, and we would go down with a certain amount of rubbish. And I remember being in a singlet and shorts and gumboots, and Kuddle would say, "That, look, there's a bike there, go and grab it, we might be able to make something." And my grandmother used to really get annoyed with Kuddle because he would come back with more than what he had. And then years later I realised that some people call it scavenging and it's not allowed. But there would be lots of whānau that would be down there and they would make good of things that were there. Or else you'd see someone throwing something out and they go, "Oh, do you mind if I have that? I've got a use for that." And I think that I remember people at those times being very creative, very clever at being able to make things from nothing. I grew up in Brighton Crescent, which is right next to Tākaro School, and I never knew until I was older, probably at university, because I'd asked my mum and dad about what was pepper potting. I'd sort of heard the notion of pepper potting, but I wasn't thinking. And Dad said, what do you mean by that? And I said, "Well, apparently there was this policy out in the old days where Māori could, with Māori Affairs, had a policy. It had come from central government, and they never allowed Māori family to be close to each other." And Dad said, oh, that's probably about the time when your mum and I went to go and get a housing loan. And he said, through Māori Affairs, because we could capitalise on you kids, he said, that was a good scheme, he said. But when we went there, they asked us what our iwi was. Oh, first of all, they said, oh, you can go. Mum had done all the inquiries first up. So they had said, we think we've got a place for you, for the Marshall family, in such and such a place. And when Dad had gone to, Mum and Dad had gone to sign it, Dad goes, oh, that's wonderful. My cousin lives in that street. And then they stopped and they said, what's your cousin's name? And he said, and he goes, oh, no, 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 we don't allow relations to live close by each other. You'll have to go in Brighton Crescent because there's no rangitāne there or no Ngāti Rangi people there. And that was true. That was, so that's how they got to be there, was because they, I think the government at the time recognised that hapū and whānau were the strongest social unit within Māori society, and if you got them all together, really, you could get quite a strong, radical kind of group that would, within our street, if we were all rangitāne or all from the awa, then that would create an opportunity for the tikanga and the customs and dialect to grow strong within there. So I don't know, for whatever reason, someone might say, oh no, that's not true, but certainly that's a take on it from our whānau. But within our street, I think something new and wonderful came out of that was down the end there were the Lamberts who came from Nuhaka, there were the Hawkins who came from another area, and there were the Marshalls behind us with the Tates, from Kaupata, around the corner with the Rauhihis, the Hōtinenis, the Reeds, and we were all different iwi. And I think for our parents, that must have been a strange thing because suddenly you're forced to socialise within Māori culture, but with different iwi, because all their socialisation before that had been with very strongly within their own iwi. But for me, it was the norm to grow up with calling someone auntie and uncle who weren't even kin. But I do remember wonderful times like the Hawkins and the Lamberts were shearers. And so they would go off for periods of time and do shearing. And we all had good voices in those days. We could all yell. And I remember Shirley Ann Hawkins would yell out, Kai, Kai, and someone go, Kai, Kai. And anyway, we'd run down the Hawkins, and on the front lawn, they had a fire going, or several fires, and they'd have a pot of corn, sweet corn that had come down from Hawke's Bay. We had lamb's tails. I'd never had lamb's tails until I went to the Hawkins. And then across the road, the Lamberts would bring something over. My mum and dad would bring the dessert, and all the whānau would get together, and even non-Māori. But I think for some of the non-Māori, they probably thought it wasn't, you could see them looking over the fence thinking, oh, fire on the front lawn, not sure about that. And when the kids would run back and say, oh, Mum, Dad, come over. They've invited us over. And they go, oh, what are you eating? Look, lamb's tails, meat. So all the kids down Brighton Crescent, whether they were Māori or non-Māori, knew how to eat Māori kai and had fun in it. And we didn't think that that was anything unusual. It was the norm. And this sort of shared or communal kai happened on a regular basis, probably monthly, if not every 6 weeks, And that was a very good thing. I went to Tākaro Primary School in Monreid Intermediate, and really delighted that I went there. I had a wonderful time at Tākaro and at Monreid. The principal at Tākaro Primary School at that time was Mr. Gregory, and I remember Mrs. Jessup being the lady in the office, and certainly someone who's been a teacher for 27 years, I sort of know that the ladies, I shouldn't say ladies because they could be gentlemen nowadays, but they run the show, don't they? And she really did run the show then. But she knew everyone, all the whānau. And she did pronounce people's names correctly as well, which I think was a big thing in the 60s. We all had Pākehā names like Deborah, not very strongly Māori or anything. In fact, it's a Hebrew name. But when I said to Dad, why didn't you call me Marama? Because I love Marama, which is my middle name. And Dad goes, because his name was Te Puhi o Te Rangi. And people, he said, they bastardised his name and called him Pū. And he said he didn't want that to happen to us. So my mother, mind you, on my booth, she said to Dad, you have made a glaring mistake, because initially you just wanted Deborah Ann Marshall, so the initials put together would make Dam. And so he goes, all right, you can have Marama in there. But that sort of hopefully explains to you some reason of why in the 60s and the 70s there weren't too many Māori children who were given Māori names. And certainly that was something very common within his own family, and I've heard it with other iwi as well, that that was a rationale of why they reverted to English names for their children. And just out of complete respect. So there were lots of families, and I think that those families were, and people within our community. I remember being at Takaro, and Mr. Kora, Robin Kora, who's senior, because I know Robin Kora Jr. was on TV for a number of years as a TV announcer, but his uncle, whom he was named after, was a wonderful teacher, and he was the first Māori teacher I'd ever had. And he was such a role model, and he was into sports. And the other thing that was interesting was that he worked with my father at Wall's Ice Cream Factory in the 60s and 70s. I couldn't get over it because I thought, gee, Mr. Quarter, he works as a teacher, and when the holidays comes, he's in the factory. But that was something that wasn't seen as unusual, because many of our families, our parents had different jobs. But I learned something interesting about Mr. Quarter. Last year we went to the Cook Islands, and Whai Huatahi and I, we took our senior syndicate class over to the Cook Islands. It was one way of introducing our tamariki who have grown up in Māori medium to meet other indigenous peoples of the world. And we thought, well, we better go back and meet our whānau in the Cook Islands. When we were there, we went to Aitutaki, and they said, do you know Robin Quarter? Well, of course, I was like, yes, just the best teacher out. He was fabulous. And they go, isn't it amazing the story about how he got to New Zealand? And, well, not him, but his father. And we were, and I sort of went, oh, I'm not sure. I've never heard the story. And apparently Robin's father was about 9 or 10 when a big boat had gone into, stopped it into Aitutaki. He was curious, jumped on board, fell asleep, woke up. They were in the middle of the ocean going somewhere. He was only about 9 or 12, somewhere in between there. And next moment he ends up in Whanganui. He arrives there looking a bit lost. Of course, the iwi there are like going, where are you from? And of course, he looked very Māori. He was Māori. And so he got whangaed by a whānau there. And years later, they went back over there. And apparently, a wonderful story. And I thought, he never told me that. He told us lots of stories, but he didn't say that. Quite fascinating. And he was a wonderful teacher, just as those principals were wonderful principals as well. In that time, though, because we knew everyone in Takaro and Highbury and actually all of Palmerston North, but I think most of the whānau, the Māori people, were down in Takaro and Highbury, and there was a great number of us. Because we knew everyone, there were people like, and we did all sports together, and I would say that our people were very good at doing sports, inter sports, and softball, netball, rugby was huge. But Hannah Burke and Peter Baker, they established a group called Te Wai Ora, which was the city's, to I know, most contemporary Māori kapahaka group. And it was really to get all of us kids together and to learn waiata in a way of transmitting Māori knowledge and Māori values in a quite a structured way. So every Sunday we'd get together. And we used to go to St. Michael's to practice, or to Takaro School. But the St. Michael's Zen was a bit different to, it was just the wharekai part, it wasn't the actual chapel part. And we would go there for dances. Friday night dances were really the rage. In fact, I'm sure it was better than Studio 54 in New York at its time. We learned how to do kapahaka, and that was where I became aware that also tangihana was happening there too. Like, they would take, if anyone died, St. Michael's was the most obvious place. We, up until that time, they would take keep the mate in their houses. But St. Michael's offered an opportunity whereby urban Māori could fulfil Māori tikanga, but in an environment that was supportive and conducive to catering for large groups. It's not to say that tangihana doesn't happen in our homes now, because sometimes it does, but certainly on my father's side from the Whanganui River, everything goes back to the marae, very traditional, but here, of course, I got to grow up and see something quite different again. So Te Wai Ora was a wonderful initiative. Also, the other thing is, with Te Wai Ora, we got to go to different marae. We got to go particularly to Motuiti, I remember, because Taylor Hemera, who was Bruce Hemera's father, and Bruce was, of course, All Black, and old boy of Boys High, but his father, Taylor, was a wonderful kapahaka exponent, and he came from Motuiti, and Uncle Taylor took us for, Hannah and Peter took us for midgets, and Uncle Taylor took us for the juniors, and I think for the seniors, if I remember, the Douglas family being quite prominent, Angus Douglas, and Auntie Pani, Ricky Hanna, and Tangi Horo Fitzgerald, they took the senior group. And so it did provide a mechanism of transmitting knowledge to the younger generation and even providing a whānau development base for the older whānau. But we did go to Motuiti quite a lot, so therefore we got to know the tangata whenua of there. We also got to know about the traditions and their customs there. I think we made a huge trip, which was quite a profound experience for me, up to the Tai Tokerau, and we went up there because Uncle Arthur Hotenene's wife Margaret was from up there, a little place called Pangaru, and the big buzz there was when we went up there in Te Wai Ora. I think it was like the first big trip I'd ever had with a group, and there was a busload of us, and it took forever to get there, what it seemed forever. But when we got there, it was just wonderful. And, of course, everywhere we went, we stopped at different marae, and proudly we sort of said, we're from Palmerston North, we're, you know, Te Wai Ora, St. Michael's, Highbury, Takaro. And everyone go, yes, we're set. But I think it was a good way of, we all identified with belonging here to Palmerston North and to Highbury and Takaro and St. Michael's and all those things. And I remember we met Sid Going up there, who had just recently retired possibly from, he was still pretty big in the 60s. We recall him being a wonderful all-black halfback. And he came and spent time with us. And I'll never forget, that was a wonderful experience to have that Māori role model. And of course, because he'd travelled overseas, he'd said to us, you know, you don't have to stop just coming up to Pangaru. He said, you could go overseas. And I must admit, I thought, oh, yes, that sounds good. I think I'll be there. I think I'll do that. And certainly a lot of the young ones that were in Te Wai Ora, and it was most of us from Takaro and Highbury who were Māori in those days, we did get to travel. And we're in a whole number of occupations now that I think are quite very different from our parents, which of course most of our parents worked at Longwearn Freezing Works, and I know my dad worked there for 20 odd years. I remember once being most annoyed with him because I'd heard in the day that when you go to Longbourn, at that time my friend Huia Eruera had come back to me. For high school I had gone to St. Joseph's Māori Girls Hot College, which is a Catholic Māori boarding school up in Hawke's Bay, and I had gone there because my father, from a family of 14, his 10 sisters, younger sisters, had all gone there, so there was an expectation that I go up to St. Joseph's for grooming. I think they thought I needed to get away from the farm, the influence at Awapuni, and all good influence, mind you, but my father did say I needed to be made a lady of, and so sent to St. Joseph's. Still kept the contacts when we came back, but when I came back one year, Huia had said to me, I think it was about our fifth form year, and we just finished the fifth form, we were waiting for school cert, and Huia had said to me, I've got a holiday job for us at Longwood, $500 a week, and I was like, wow, you know, and most of my friends who I grew up with had gone out to Longwood as well, because big money there, and the different, and we could all get in, because you know, we had those kind of connections, or someone would know when a job was coming up and you'd apply for it. And so I felt like I had a good chance of getting in. Well, my father hit the roof. And he said, no, you know, I haven't sent you away to boarding school for nothing. And he said, I'll give you an alternative. And I said, well, this better be a good alternative. In my mind, I was thinking, I didn't dare voice that to Dad because you didn't answer back your parents in those days. And I said, what is it, Dad? And he goes, you can be my personal chef and I will pay you. And you know what? How much I had to work for Dad? For $15 a week. He was the fussiest thing out, but I did learn how to cook sweetbreads just as he wanted or whatever. And I said, just a minute, Dad, let me weigh this up. 500 working with Huya at the works and having great fun, and $15 working for you. I don't know. You know? And he said, no, I don't want you to go to the works, because if you go there, you'll think you'll be stuck there. And I said, well, it sounds a good way to be stuck. I don't mind, you know. All you and Mum had said was, just do well, go for 3 years at secondary school. Excuse me. And I had been a good girl at secondary school, as I had at primary and intermediate. And I said, I have done what you've wanted. I have got good reports. I've been a good girl. And now I think I shall go and work at the works. And he said, oh, no, you don't. You will go back to St. Joseph's. And he did really, that was the first falling out I'd ever really had with my father and Mum, who was probably supporting Dad on the side but trying to be the good parent of the two, you know. Oh, dear, I can't really budge Dad, but, you know. So I did go back. Well, interestingly enough, I mean, that was the year I got to be head prefect. That was the year I got to be selected by the Taradale Rotary Club to be an exchange student to Tiverton, Rhode Island, and in 1978. And my friend Huya, her parents forced her to do the same. She became an AFS student and went over to Pennsylvania. But I'm so grateful that Dad did send me back. The other thing, which I think is a profound statement from my parents, particularly Dad, he'd never gone to high school, but I said, look, when school cert came in, I'd passed everything and with fairly good marks. And I said, so now don't you think I can go working? And he said, don't be stupid, I didn't know what you were capable of. Now I know you are, you're going back. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've done it now. So I really did have a great time in the States, and I had a wonderful time. But I do think it was probably from that trip up to Pangaroo where Sid Goings said, you guys can do it, and look beyond this, look beyond New Zealand. And the freezing works, yes, I never did go there to work, but my father had allowed my younger brothers to work there. And when I had said to him, that's sexist, and why are you letting the boys go and I can't go? He said, oh, well, he said, they're only boys. And then by then the boys were, what? And he said, you have potential. You've got the ability. This says you've got ability. He said, they've yet to show me something like this themselves. So that was a funny thing. But I do remember the Longbourn freezing works. It did teach us, I think it did concretize me about, and not only me, but others of my generation whose parents worked at Longbourn, about unions. At a young age, I knew what a lockout was. I knew what the objectives of the union were. I knew that when there were lockout times or when it was seasonal, that everyone would put together and there was a collective and they'd put their food together or their stores together and then distribute it. So I felt that they worked very closely as a collective and they were looking after each other as a community. Moving on, also, the sports was quite prominent, and some of the role models for us as younger people were certainly sports people. And I remember my father used to take us out of school when the Ranfurly Shield was on, or when the Lions toured, or others. And I remember going back to school the next day, and actually all the Māori families would go to those games. I was telling Whaihuatahi about that. And when we'd go back to school the next day, the teacher would go, and where were you? And I said, I was at rugby. I went to the big game, and the teacher go, well, you've missed a whole day of school. And I said, my father said that it was important that we go and support our local team. And the teacher goes, well, I think it's important you're here. And I think that did sort of alert me to the fact that there were different values as well within at that young age, that I thought, my father values us going off there, but the teacher didn't. And I thought, but by the same token, we did have a great, great day. And Dad was never, didn't hide it. You know, he didn't say, oh, tell them you were sick, but you actually went to the game. Because we were all painted up and had banners. There were, I'd say most of the Māori families did go there because they valued that notion of working as a collective and supporting as a collective. And it was a shared experience as well. I'm just looking at the time. Oh, yes, I am on time. I think for me, the influence of a whānau and community were huge in my life. And I think growing up in the 60s and the 70s, with being Māori within Palmerston North, it was that there was a strong sense of community. And I go back to the fact that, you know, I called people auntie and uncle, and still do to this day, who were not even kin. And that was quite, must have been very foreign to my whānau, but it wasn't for our generation. So I think we were the first generation of Māori to grow up with that sense. Also, those who were non-Māori were just as important, because we had that shared experience of growing up in that area and doing things together. In fact, I know that Ranginui Walker once wrote in his book, Ka Whawhai Tonu, gone are the days when you can tell a Māori by the colour of their skin. Well, certainly in the 60s and the 70s, it was heading that way too, because there were Māori who were fair and Māori who were darker complexion, but you couldn't really tell. And in fact, within our household, our father would speak Māori, but we didn't speak it outside the house. And years later, I've come across colleagues and friends, well, actually friends that I grew up with, and they said, we didn't know you could speak Māori. And I don't think, I acquired Māori probably when I went to secondary school and certainly university, because I wasn't able to access it to any great degree with fluency at home. But I said to them, oh, yes, they said, we didn't even know you were Māori. You never spoke it. And I think that was a standout for me. No one ever asked if we were Māori or what that meant, or, you know, it wasn't, you had to almost leave your culture behind. I've read some literature and people were saying you have to leave your cultural luggage at the door as you enter. And I felt like that within the schooling system in the 60s and 70s, we did have to compromise. And I think when I trained as a teacher in the 80s, that was when there was an awareness, a greater awareness. That's why Mr. Quarter stood out, because he would teach everyone greetings, waiata Māori, he'd make you feel good about being Māori. And he was a rarity. Oh, I shouldn't cry. But I should have a drink. sorry. I think the influence of positive experiences such as kapahaka and sports and sharing were huge. And I think that really positive. And there are things that my colleagues and friends remember. They said, oh, Debbie, you always used to have the best knickers or the best cleats. I think, where did they get that from? And apparently it was because, you know, they noticed those kind of things when you work together and you have those things. And then they go, but we know why. And I said, oh, please tell me, because I don't even know why. And they said, you were an only girl, that's why, and your mother could sew. And I think that was true. But in saying that also, my mother did have a wonderful skill. She was a beautiful machinist and could sew anything. So if there was, I remember one of my friends came to Mum with a bed sheet that was lemon, and said to Mum that they were going to a wedding and could she sew something up. And Mum sewed up this beautiful dress and a bolero jacket. And I remember being quite envious and thinking, oh, I'm going to ask Mum to get a pink sheet, you know. But or people would show up on our doorstep and they would have pants that had been ripped. This could be at 7 o'clock in the morning and a knock, knock, knock on the door and they go, oh, Auntie Yvonne, Dad's got to go to work but he's got a rip in his pants. Can you sew it up, please? Because one mum would, but she was also one of the few people who had a sewing machine. But it also wasn't unusual because people would, share things. If there was someone with a skill or a resource within our community, they willingly shared that. Like, for example, the Hawkins down the road. They knew everything about shearing, about farming, and Uncle Hector actually even kept chickens at the back of his hen coop and would have eggs and supplied everyone with eggs. My friend Shirley, who's since passed on, bless her, but her and I were the same age, and she worked for one of the government departments in Palmerston North here, and I saw her and I said, how's Uncle Hector? And she said, good. She said, oh, shame of it. She said, my boss had to go around and tell him off, and I said, oh, what for? I was trying to think of what the connection would be here, and she said, well, in a nice way, he said, Heck, you know, living in Brighton Crescent, that's right in the heart of Palmerston North. You know, that's a pretty rural, urban area. And Uncle Hector goes, yeah. So I don't think it's suitable to keep 3 cows here in your backyard. And that was only in the 80s too, may I add, in the 80s. And if Uncle Heck had his way, you know, he would still be having all those things here. So there are many funny stories. I also recall something. I can say this now because bless him, he's passed away, but an uncle of ours who worked at the Longbourn Freezing Works, he, in talking about everyone, caring about everyone and sharing things, just before I was about to go away to the States in 1978, I get a knock on the door, I open the door and it's one of the younger cousins, and of course, when I mean cousins, we weren't kin, but you know, we'd grown up together, so there was that closeness, and he goes, is Auntie and Uncle here? And I went, no. He goes, good. Dad said you guys got to get around to our place, and which is in Wilson Crescent. You know, oops, maybe I shouldn't have even identified the street, but it's all right. He won't get caught now. And so we'd go around there and laid out there with all these clothes. And he said, right. And my uncle was like Del Boy. I don't know if you've seen that program on TV, yeah. Del Boy. And he'd go, right, Debbie, go and grab 3 things that you want, and I'll write it down. Yeah. You go. And anyway, I go home and I was wearing in Levi jeans in those days were huge, but my parents, one, wouldn't let me wear jeans, and two, you know, it cost a lot of money and all that kind of thing. And I put them on and my father goes, where did you get those? And I said, oh, Uncle Jim, you know, we went shopping at his house. And Dad goes, oh, I think they've fallen off the back of a truck. Take that back there. Take that back there. So the caring even encompassed things that weren't quite, kosher. That was the first time I ever learned a lesson from Mum and Dad, and they said, we need to sit down and talk about this. But it was a caring community, and there was never any violence or anything like that as well, what I remember. I do remember kids growing up in Takaro and Highbury and being able to, I'd phone up Mum and Dad and say, I'm going to stay at Uncle Arthur and Auntie Margaret's, no problem. Or Uncle Bob Tate, who lived at the back of us, I used to love his chow mein, and he would make it for me once a week, just for me. And now that I think about it, that's just wonderful. But I had some of his chow mein, and we did that for years. You know, just imagine this. And he had a big tribe of kids himself, but he still found time to make a pot of chow mein. Needless to say, I would love to do that for someone, but being spoilt by these people, I don't even know how to cook properly, so I can't. But I'm sure that they've all got wonderful stories and funny stories, and it was certainly a privilege and a pleasure to grow up young, Māori, within Palmerston North in the 1960s and 70s. And I think from a schooling perspective, educationally, we have grown and developed, and we're far more inclusive I think I don't believe we were inclusive within the education system. Any attempt to hold on to our Māoriness came really from home, or else in those groupings such as Te Waiora, St. Michael's, you know. But I think we've come a long, long way. But certainly the strong sense of community still exists now. And it's quite handy because when I go over to Takaroa Highbury, I can see kids, and if there's a little mischief one there or something, and it's like, who are you? And they'll go, ba, 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 ba. She go, oh, is Millie your mother or so-and-so your mother? And next minute the kids, like, their faces drop and like, oh, my God, this woman knows my parent, you know. And they go, and they go, yes, what's it to you? And I said, well, you tell her that I'll come around and see her if you carry on that nonsense, you know. And, sorry, fire. And then they're off. And that's all these years later. And I haven't lived over there, but I still love Takaroa and Highbury. And you know the families there, but of course it's grown a great deal now. But certainly the sense of community is great, and I do acknowledge, I can see Anthony at the back. Kia ora, Anthony. I just love the Highbury library over there, the community library. And it's just beautiful, Anthony, just wonderful. And certainly the other day, I didn't tell you, but we were over there for kapa haka practice and doing the poi. I saw you come and I said to Huatai, I should have said to Anthony, it's all right if we're here, but we're on the, you know, once something, a facility like that gets there, everyone feels a sense of ownership because it's something, a place where they can go to and feel safe. It's a place of learning. It's a place of people. And I think that that's an important thing. And we should still encourage all those things. So, everyone, I've probably waffled on far too much, but it is just a personal narrative. But I would like to thank you for listening. And sorry for putting up with my coughing and spluttering, but it's been a joy to be here. Nā reira, mā te runga rawa, koutou katoa e manaaki e tiaki. Kia ora koutou.
Kia ora whaia, Debbie. Nā mihi nui ki a koe mō tō kōrero i tēnei, tēnei rā. Has anyone got any quick questions? If there's such a thing as a quick question to whaia, Debbie?
Yes, yes. Your Lois's brother, aren't you? Kia ora. Yes. That's right. Yes. Mrs. Shepherd, is it Mr. and Mrs. Shepherd? Are they your grandparents? Wallace. Well, oh, yes, the Wallace, yes.
They all got on the community, but some people were more well off than others.
Yes.
But also down to earth.
Yes. Yes. Oh, he just loved your mum and her sisters as well, and your grandparents. And I think that must have been a profound experience from a boy who was up in an isolated part of Ranana, which is probably the 5 minutes aside of Jerusalem, to be uprooted from home and then brought over here. But fortunately, he went to the Wallas and had was really raised by them for that, because he was only young. He was only 14, just turned 14 at that. I couldn't imagine, you know, letting my 14-year-old go off and not see them, but he is so grateful to your whānau, and he's got lovely stories to tell too, you know. Yeah, thank you for saying that, yes. And I see Lois every night walking, pounding the streets too. I think, certainly when I recall my kuru talking about Rangiotu, they saw themselves as cousins, and I think that he always looked up to Rangiotu as the place where the tuakana whānau were, the te awi awis. So they did always acknowledge that as being cousins and kin there, and they were very respectful. And he told me this sad story, but he said at the time when Kiki Whenua burnt down, and I take it that was over around by Awapuni down that end, was, and my mother knows more, he said as a young man he remembers the wailing that went on for days and days, and he said all the old kui kui, and I was thinking, my gosh, to me he seemed ancient, so if he's saying that he remembers the kui kui, they must have been very old, kuia, just going there and sitting down and crying, and he said they slept there, they didn't move, and then after about 3 or 4 days, they got the embers, the ashes, and they would just, they put them all together, and then they took them somewhere and buried it and had karakia. But he just said that's the saddest thing that ever struck him was all the kuia getting together and crying for days and sitting there. And I did think that had a big influence on him. But certainly from what I understood, they all knew they were related to each other and how, and I think that they were the relationships or the interactions were respectful and they were all supportive. Yes.
On behalf of everybody here, Debbie, thank you very much for that talk. It was fantastic. It's wonderful to hear your own personal story, and I know everybody was listening intently. Couldn't hear anybody shuffling, or it was fantastic. And I think Debbie was a bit worried that we would have bums on seats today, and a little bit more worried when we did, weren't you? So thank you very much for sharing your story. I think that's one of the fantastic things about Local History Week is that everybody's sharing stories and we're all gathered around listening to stories. So thank you all very much for coming today. Tomorrow lunchtime, we've got our very own city archivist, Leslie Courtney, who's going to be talking about the Houses of Massey. So that's on at 12 o'clock tomorrow. And of course, from tomorrow, we've got the afternoon walks happening around the city. So grab a program if you're interested in any of those and talk to us about it. But kia ora, Debbie, thank you very much for today. It was very special. And yes, thank you for coming in your lunchtime, I believe. Yes, so thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming.